Live from the 607, it's the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour, where we're talking everything movies, TV, comics, and entertainment. Join in the conversation on social media with the hashtag ODPH, because here we go. Welcome to an all-new edition of the ODPH Podcast. What's happening, everybody? My name is Ken M. Joining me in studio, as always, you know him. He's the co-host. His name is Padawan J.
Well, let me talk to you.
Yeah, boy, do we have a lot to talk about in the land of entertainment. You have tuned into the show that talks movies, TV, comics, and more. That is the ODPH Entertainment Edition, and we definitely like to keep that conversation going after the show. So, Pad, where does everybody go?
ODPHpodcast.com.
Right on. Swing on over to the website and sign up on all social media accounts. Everything's been updated. We even have the TikTok link right on the homepage now, too. I know some people have been asking about that. So, boom, there you go. We definitely talk with everybody after the show, in between shows. This is how we build up the ODPH Society, folks. It's that simple. Also, check out the T Public Store link. It is that time of the week, I guess I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Sale time is going on, so you definitely want to make sure you're going to get some ODPH swag for a very discounted price, and that is what we like to see. It's not about making the money. It's about seeing the brand out in the open. So we definitely have a lot of cool stuff there, so if you want to go get some, that's perfect time to do it. Enough said about that. Shout out to all our amazing patrons. One tier, $2 a month. They have a whole page on the show dedicated to them as well. Definitely appreciate their support in that monetary way. It definitely blows my mind that we have patrons, and I'm super excited about that. An episode is coming very, very shortly. I just got to figure out what we're going to do this month. It's wide open. Also, make sure to check out the blog section. We have reviews dropping left and right. Check out the classified section, which has friends of the show, such as 3FM Podcast, Dragon Master Games, Nerd Initiative. A lot of things happening over there, and many, many more. Also, the directory. Pad, how many providers are we on?
669,139.
That is why he is the statistician to the stars. Also, check out the music section of the show, where we have such amazing bands as Floodlands, Second Suitor, Thomas Jolu, Shout at the Robots, Brian Wolf and the Howlers, and many, many more that offer their music up for us to play during the shows and on streaming services. It's absolutely incredible to see it happen. All that and so much more, odphpodcast.com. And if you're using hashtags on social media, well, why don't you use the hashtag odphpod? Kicking off the entertainment edition of the show, we are going to be recapping the return of The Walking Dead's Rick and Michonne.
Yes.
The power couple of The Walking Dead universe is back in their own spinoff series, the long-awaited one that we have been waiting quite some time for.
About 5, 6, 7 years, whatever it is.
It's been a while. And honestly, I have lost track. I honestly did not believe the show was ever going to see the light of day until we saw last week's episode. And sure enough, they're back in full swing. It's more to the tone of the original Walking Dead season,
mm-hmm.
more to the tone of the comics,
mm-hmm.
which so far so good with the ratings
yeah.
for the first episode. They were very happy about that yeah. over at the AMC networks.
Yeah, and not too much of a drop-off. Last week's episode was 896,000. This week's 880,000. So a little bit of a drop-off, but not like, oh my God, they lost 100,000 viewers.
Yeah, they retained a lot.
Yeah.
And rightfully so, because obviously when we were talking about the two of the most popular characters of The Walking Dead
yeah.
universe, I can't say the most popular.
No.
Because Daryl Dixon is in that equation.
Yes.
But when you talk about Andrew Lincoln reprising his role as Rick Grimes and Danai Gurira reprising her role as Michonne, you are going to have a generated buzz amongst the fandom.
I mean, and historically, across all mediums, any character that appears on screen, be it silver screen, television screen, or computer screen, you're carrying a katana, you're fairly popular.
Mm-hmm. This is facts. You can't argue it. It's just, it is the way. So that being said, we are going to be recapping the second episode of the show entitled Gone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're new to the ODPH, first and foremost, thank you for checking us out. Leave us a review on your favorite podcatcher. It definitely helps the algorithm. What we'd like to do is give you a spoiler-free statement about what we're going to be covering. And then after that, we give you a countdown, and then we go into deep spoiler talk. So if you want to be ruined for whatever reason, pause the episode at the timestamp, jump out, watch the episode, and come back in, and then have that conversation with us after on social media. It's boom. It's that simple. Because we don't want to ruin anything for you. And Pad always has those liner notes in the episode, so we definitely cannot be blamed for spoiling anything for you.
And especially the nice thing, too, is if you don't feel like going to the liner notes, I know Apple Podcasts just launched the transcript thing.
Yes!
Which, hey, if you're on Apple Podcasts, hit the little thing in the bottom left corner of your screen. You can read a transcript. And I tried it myself this morning after the update went out. fairly goddamn accurate, I must say.
Oh, that's amazing.
Rather impressive. But the timestamp should, in theory, I haven't tried the transcript thing with numbers in there, but you know, it might be in there. You never know.
Yeah, we'll have to take a look. So definitely, if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, let us know how that's working out. We definitely want to get that feedback for you. So that being said, let us talk about the spoiler-free version of The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, entitled Gone, that was on AMC television this past week, Pat.
The episode was good. You know, I predicted last week, it was kind of in the same vein as the first episode because it had the same directing crew behind it as the first one. Bert and Bernie are the name of the crew who directed the first episode and also directed this one. And, you know, it was good. It was a fun watch. It was nice. It didn't feel like too much of a retread of the story, which I was a little fearful of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it didn't tread on too much, and it didn't take super long to get to where the two characters, because obviously if you saw the first episode, you know they met up at the end of the first episode, so it didn't take super long, because I was afraid they were going to do that where like it's her whole story and it's the whole thing, and then it's just going to like get to the end of the second episode and it's going to be the exact same ending where they meet, and I'm like, all right, well, what was the point of this other than backstory? Didn't do that, so I was happy with it.
Yeah, this episode I thought they did a solid job explaining Michonne's journey. And I think that it did not borrow too much from what Rick had already gone through in the past episode. I thought that it told a very solid story. How we got from point A to point B made a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely had a couple points I was like, okay, let's see where we're going here. But I didn't think it was anything that really took me out of the episode as well.
Right.
I thought they just were pretty straightforward about everything. Just a couple pauses here and there I think they could have cut some time with.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, we finally got to where we wanted to be by the time we got to the end of the episode. So I'm very interested to see where things are playing out from here, because now I fully think that we've gotten the backstories out of the way. It's going to be a really interesting story moving forward. And just with four episodes left of it, we're going to have to really kind of speed up the process too about what is going to be going on here.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, in 3, 2, 1, Pad, talk to me.
Like I said, I thought it was a good episode. A little afraid they were going to just kind of recycle the first episode story, just change it to, you know, change the word in the document on their computer from Rick to Michonne and change a couple of pieces and kind of do a wash, rinse, repeat. But it wasn't that. It was kind of interesting to see how we got from A to B,
mm-hmm.
you know, and got to the end and where it sets up for, you know, the final, what is it, like four more episodes or something like that? Four more episodes. Very interested to see where this goes. I get the feeling that while this may be a one and done for these characters, certainly not going to be a one and done for this overall story and some of the pieces that are involved.
Yeah. I fully think that this one, like I say, they had a solid story with it. We saw some familiar faces pop back in.
Uh-huh.
And definitely tied into the bleakness of the Walking Dead universe, because let's face it, there is no such thing as a happy ending. I thought they explained enough where it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that it left us hanging a little bit about where we're going from here. But obviously, this was just to really give Michonne her journey and her moment. And I thought Danai Gurira knocked it out of the park. I just am very curious about what we got from the ending here.
Yeah.
And how that is going to go moving forward. See, that's the big thing I'm just waiting to see, because like I have an idea where things are going, but I'm not 100% sure.
Right.
Because as this episode kicks off, it is dated 6 years after Rick Grimes' disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to kind of keep that into check.
Yes.
And then Michonne is traveling to find Rick because now she's fully on her mission to go find her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And she runs into a couple old friends.
Well, it's kind of where we left off when we last saw Michonne, which, you know, was in season 10, episode 13, What We Become. It was her final episode of the mainline series.
Mm-hmm.
And it was her basically, it was a little bit of back flashback. I almost forgot the word there. It was a little bit of a flashback to, you know, the bridge exploding and then, oh my God, Rick's dead. But then she sees the phone that's got the drawing and it's got his name on it. And she puts two and two together and, oh my God, Rick's alive. And she goes off looking for him. But we kind of cut a lot of the in-between stuff there out because time constraints.
Mm.
But she's with Aiden and Bailey, helping them reunite with their caravan. But then they're like, oh, hey, you should join us. And she's like, no.
Yeah, obviously Michonne wants to keep a safe distance because obviously...
She's skeptical.
Well, yeah, with her mission, I don't think she wants to get caught up in another colony.
Well, and she's seen, you know, she's been around the show since what, like season two, season three?
Mm-hmm.
I want to say season three because season two was at the farm. She's been around a while. She's seen a lot of people come and go. She's seen a lot of tyrants, I guess we could say,
yeah,
come and go. She's understandably skeptical when people show up because anytime you see something that looks like a bright, shiny utopia in this universe, you don't got to pull the rock up all that far to see the slimy, gross underside.
Mm-hmm. That's what happens. Even though Aiden, whose role is reprised by Breida Wool,
mm-hmm.
and Bailey, who's been played by Andrew Batchelor.
Yeah, from Vine way back in the day and TikTok fame. It's King Batch.
Yes.
I saw him. I'm like, wait a minute. I forgot about him.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's been a while since we've seen him, so yeah. It's cool to see them come back. But this is where, like I say, she's trying, they're both trying to get Michonne to go with them.
Yep.
She is just not about this, and she is just literally focused about what she's trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But she does kind of get them to come along a little bit.
You know, and it's kind of an interesting scenario because she's getting interrogated by a person who's in charge. I don't know if it's the head person
mm-hmm.
in charge of their group. And basically this person is like reading them the riot act and like, listen, I need to know everything that happened, including detail, including, you know, probably wanted latitude and longitude coordinates for all we knew. And they're all, and all Michonne wants is a horse.
Yeah.
Because she knows she's got to go a long distance. They don't say where they are, but presumably they're near Alexandria, which is in the comics, it's near Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
It's near Washington, D.C. I don't think they've ever said in the show where exactly it is. If they have, I forget about it, so apologies. But all Michonne, getting back to the point, wants is a horse.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman's like, well, we can't just do that. We have limited resources and everything is precious and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, fuck it. Just like, even at this point, the head honcho is like getting outvoted by everyone in the room. Michonne wants a horse. The other two are like, hey, you know, she saved our lives. The least we can do is give her a horse and let her be on her way.
Yeah. So it is kind of an interesting play up, though. And Michonne eventually does get her horse.
Yeah.
And she literally comes into one of the biggest zombie hordes
we have
ever seen.
Jesus.
I mean, this kind of rivaled what we saw
at
the end of the...
in the later seasons in the main show.
I was going to say the big war that they had between all the colonies.
And the cave system that a bunch of people fell into, but nobody died.
Reasons.
Uh-huh.
Still not over that.
No, we know what the reason is. Plot armor.
Yeah. Ugh. I digress.
Mm-hmm.
But we do see that Michonne does get saved by Aiden Bailey and mm-hmm. Nat.
Yes.
Who is played by Matthew August Jeffers.
Thought he did a fantastic job.
Yeah, he was great. He was
charismatic as all fuck.
Mm-hmm. So she winds up tagging along with them because when they were coming to save her, they were more or less motivated by her and her convictions.
Yeah.
So they left their own group to follow her
mm-hmm.
with some others. And then this is where things get a little dicey because, as we always say, there's no such thing as a happy ending.
Correct.
In The Walking Dead.
Correct.
Universe. Because as they agree to go help her look for Rick,
mm-hmm.
they come across the CRM.
Uh-huh.
And Pad, what do they get hit with?
Chlorine gas.
Yeah. This is one thing from the CRM, the military unit that has been more or less running things in the U.S. at this time in the zombie apocalypse.
It's their MO.
Yeah. I mean, it's been something that they have been, you know, implementing their will, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
They have been using chemical warfare.
And this is a legit thing. This isn't something, you know, they made up for the show. Chlorine gas is a real goddamn thing. It's a real goddamn thing.
Yeah, but you hear about the stories, we heard with Rick in the first episode, too. It's like they have access to that kind of weaponry.
Yeah.
That is a very scary combination.
Well, the other thing, too, is having done some reading up on, because admittedly, I didn't see all of Walking Dead World Beyond more than first episode.
Right.
They used it in that show, too.
Right.
And it was the CRM that used it. So, like I said, bright, shiny utopia, shitty underside.
Mm-hmm. So the CRM attacks with that gas.
Uh-huh.
Everybody gets affected with it. But,
yeah.
But, unfortunately, Aiden and Bailey are the ones that are most notably taken out. Like, that whole group that she was with is gone.
Yeah.
With the exception of Nat.
Yep.
So they more or less have to recover in a shopping mall.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, like I say, it was a retail store.
Yeah.
And they wind up having to wait an entire year for their lungs to clear up.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is kind
of... Because when the attack hits, they go to run off of the streets and get out of the line of fire, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the characters between Aiden, Bailey, Michonne, and Nat, they're all, like, bleeding from their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you would think it's tears. No, it's, like, blood or something that's coming from their eyes. So it's a wicked after effect that really messes with you
mm-hmm.
once it's all said and done.
Yeah, Michonne has to be the one to put down Aiden and Bailey, too.
Right. And I think while this whole thing is going on, the year they're sitting there, like, Michonne is trying to convince Nat to go back home, and he's just, no, he's not having it.
Well, he's committed to the cause.
Sure. Like, well, and at this point.
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing. He has nothing to go back to.
Because at one point during their whole journey up to this point, he said that everyone he cares for is right here.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, even you and he's talking to Michonne, who I haven't known all that long. I really care about you. You're one of my friends.
Yeah. It is an interesting dynamic that mm-hmm. they have. And like I say, this is where Nat was the breakout character of this episode. Because he's literally pouring his heart out on the emotions. And mm-hmm. even though Michonne is being very reluctant, because you can definitely tell she doesn't want to get close to anybody.
Right.
And this is why, and she feels very haunted by this, they do wind up waiting their time out to heal, which, like I say, it takes a year.
Yeah.
So once they get back on the mission,
mm-hmm.
they start really figuring out where the boat's logbook is
mm-hmm.
that has been their, the guiding force, I guess that we could say.
Yeah, yeah.
For everything going on.
It's the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. So this is where Michonne has been, like I say, focused on going. So they go and they start really focusing on their search.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a situation that no matter where they've gone, they've had to go take care of whoever's been in front of them.
Yep.
They're not getting anywhere. Nat is like basically saying, you got to go home. Like,
right.
You need to go back to Alexandria.
Yeah.
Rick is still alive, but you got to go back.
Yep.
And he finally does. Like, this is not something that happens right away, but.
Well, because I think what finally breaks her is seeing that boat. That's been the guiding force and the guiding like hope that he's still alive
mm-hmm.
is this boat. And she finally gets and sees this boat. That's beached and washed up, and there's all these dead bodies that look like they've been burned,
mm-hmm.
So that they won't turn. And she just sees it, and she just kind of breaks her spirit, and she just kind of comes to this realization, like, there's no chance he's still here.
Yeah. So no matter what they've been doing, surviving, like I say, when they walked into that scenario,
mm-hmm.
This is something that is very typical in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Like I say, if you're surviving this long, you're taking out bodies on the way and you're coming across more dead bodies.
Yeah.
This show is not a happy one, folks.
Not usually, no.
No. But when Nat finally says, okay, Michonne, you got to go back home, finally talks his magic,
mm-hmm.
they start heading back. And then sure enough, this is where we start seeing what mm-hmm. we saw at the end of episode one.
Mm-hmm.
They notice that there's a CRM helicopter flying.
Yep.
And they start attacking the helicopter.
Because Nat has a MacGyvered surface-to-air rocket launcher. Like if you've ever played a military war game or even any of the Ace Combat games,
mm-hmm.
they have the SAM missiles, surface-to-air missiles. Dude's got a homemade one on his back that I think he used fireworks for. Because they're sure as shit not actual military missiles.
I just define it as reasons. But sure enough, he winds up taking out one of the helicopters.
Yep, which is what we saw at the end of the first episode.
Mm-hmm. So it comes down, and this is where you see like just the other side of the vantage point
mm-hmm.
from Michonne's end mm-hmm. about killing the soldiers that are coming out of there.
Well, and at some point, too, along the way here, Michonne also gave Nat a hand-drawn map on how to get to Alexandria.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was like, she never said, or if she did, I missed it. I think it was like an in case they get separated type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But keep that in mind.
Right. So at this point, they're fighting their way through.
Mm-hmm.
Michonne comes up across who Rick is. Obviously, yep. We have the big moment that everybody's been waiting for. Rick and Michonne are reunited.
Uh-huh.
And like we say, there is no such thing as a happy ending in the Walking Dead universe.
Yep, because Nat sees Rick, sees the outfit he is in, recognizes it, and says, is this Rick? And there's a pause where she goes, yeah. And then he goes, what the? And right in the middle of the sentence, blood starts erupting and you hear a gunshot and the blood starts erupting from his chest. He's been shot through the back by one of the surviving, although admittedly, I think they die right after, CRM soldiers.
Yeah, because Rick kills him right after.
Right. I couldn't remember if Rick killed him or like they just like, oh, this is my last gasp thing I do.
Yeah, they did that and then he saw what happened and fired on him.
Okay.
And took care of it. So okay. It was like, this is where, obviously, reality sets back in. So all the dream sequences we saw in episode one are completely gone. Mm-hmm. No pun intended.
And at this point, everyone Michonne came up here with is dead.
Mm-hmm. So at this stage, Rick is just saying, you're going to need a story to get by.
Because he knows the CRM, as advanced as they are, advanced for the apocalypse world they live in, they're going to know that this helicopter went down because it didn't return.
Right.
And they're gonna follow along and figure out where it went down, and they're going to come after her.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not far behind.
Right. So when this is going down, you see that Rick has the plan going in. Michonne is taken, but she's smiling because she's like, okay, we have the plan. We're going to escape. It's going to be the happy ending. Because
the other thing, too, is he tells her, do you have anything on you about Alexandria or anything? She's like, yeah, well, yeah, I got a map. Get rid of it.
Yep. So they are truly going to be on their own, and there's no way home.
Uh-huh.
So Michonne is taken away. And then Rick is thinking, well, maybe, just maybe, I'm going to get this.
Thinking on the fly.
Yep.
And Michonne starts thinking on the fly because she gets brought back to Philadelphia and the CRM's headquarters and starts getting interrogated. She does tell a bit of a story, but she blends some reality with her fibbery, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
She does say, oh, I was from Georgia. I was part of a group of about 40, you know, and I was led by some folks that I thought were very upstanding, but they chose to, you know, they turned out to be not so nice folks, and how she had a husband and kids, but they're both dead, and, you know, and she's playing it off like she's been on the road for a while, because the one thing, she keeps looking at the camera they're using to record her.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, well, why do you keep looking at the picture or the reflection or whatever it is? And she goes, oh, well, I haven't seen myself for a while, so I'm just kind of shocked at how I look.
Yeah.
She's even using like a different vocal inflection in her tone, you know, to kind of really try and throw them off.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, hey, listen, you know, what we've got here is basically a remnant or a shell of what you're used to from the previous life. We keep things very, and I'm paraphrasing, they keep things very close to the vest. Yeah. We keep things very close to the vest, I should say. And that, like, well, if we allow you to stay here, you know, you can't leave this city.
Right.
You're behind the walls. You can go anywhere behind the walls, but on the other side, on the outside part of the walls, you can't go there.
Mm-hmm.
And so she elects to stay. She starts walking around. But then, she and Rick can't stay away from each other.
Right.
And while they're having a heart-to-heart, kissy-kissy makeup, you know, like, oh, my God, I'm so happy you're here. I'm so happy you're alive, which I understand.
Sure.
Rick gets spotted.
Mm-hmm.
And who was it that spotted him, Ken?
Oh, the one and only Jadis, played by Pollyanna McIntosh, who is, you know, one of the worst villains on the show.
Yeah.
And she instantaneously recognizes Michonne.
She saw through the lies. She saw through what Rick was spinning. And she pulls Rick into her room and basically says to him, and I'm quoting, Rick, sorry for being blunt, but what the fuck are you doing?
Yep.
And he does not answer. He just looks at her.
Mm-hmm.
And the final shot of the show is Michonne kind of surveying things. She climbs up a structure of some sort, looks out, sees the at least some of the setup. I bet you it's not all of it. Some of the setup the CRM has military-wise. All the while, she's playing with the lighter that what Nat had throughout the episode. And on it says, danger.
Yeah.
In the fade to black.
Yeah, it's an interesting scenario now set up. Because it looks like Michonne's going to try taking down the CRM from the inside. But with Jadis watching her now, all bets are off.
And I don't know if we can trust Rick.
That's the whole thing. I love how Andrew Lincoln's playing this.
Yeah, because the one thing he says when Michonne discovers him after what we saw at the end of last week's episode, Michonne is shocked, and he the first thing he says, it's not, oh my God, it's you, oh my God, you're here, or oh my God, you're alive. The first thing he says to her, I'm not with them.
Right.
And then you have this whole song and dance, because we didn't see any of Jadis in the first episode. This is the first we've seen her for this spinoff. The first thing she says to Rick, what the fuck are you doing?
Mm.
So he's playing somebody, or he's playing both sides. We'll see.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting to see how it's set up. Ojeda is now finally emerging on the show.
Yeah.
This is a new dynamic that's thrown into the mix.
And I like it.
I like it, too, because obviously you would think that Rick and Michonne going against the world, they're going to win easily.
Mm-hmm.
Jadis knows how they operate. So now seeing her in play, it makes for an interesting new stat quo as they're moving into the middle act of their story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not sure where we're going to go from here because, I mean, I don't want it to be too predictable.
Right.
But this is where I think maybe we'll see a confrontation between Jadis and Michonne sooner than later.
Probably.
And maybe you might see Jadis be that rival that Michonne needs on the show.
Could be.
I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, I think they'll play this off very nicely. And with Rick being in his altered mind state, anything can happen. But this is what makes for the best television. But I think overall, they really hit their marks of what they need to do with Michonne. It was a nice one-and-done story.
Because the other thing, too, is you can tell this isn't the same Rick from when Michonne last saw him. Because he brings up how he tried to escape. And he says, the last time I tried to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, what do you mean the last time you tried to escape? And he basically, without saying, goes, well, you know, I tried to escape, and it was kind of useless.
Yeah. So we'll have to wait to see with him. But like I say, there's a lot of big upside with this show so far.
Yeah.
Since they've come back, it's been a little darker in the tone, which I like.
I do, too.
I think if you read The Walking Dead comics, this is nothing new.
Yes.
If you're just a pop culture fan that's into the show, this might be a little more alarming for you, but it's not bad.
Right.
But it's just something you have to – it's an acquired taste, so to speak. But like we say, we've been reading Walking Dead since –
The
early days. So this is nothing new for us. I like seeing the more darker, mature tone. And just where we go from here literally is going to be anybody's guess, but definitely stay tuned for the ride for that one because we have 4 more episodes left to talk about it. We'll definitely hit our points with that. So that being said, hit us up on that hashtag ODPHpod. What is your thoughts about The Ones Who Live, entitled Gone, episode 2 of the new Walking Dead series starring Rick and Michonne? Let's talk about it, shall we? But first, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You ever wondered what comics Mark from Vale and I is into? What Zach from Left Behind's favorite MCU movies are? Well, Metalcore Nerds is the show for you. My name is Sean Mott, and here at Metalcore Nerds, we cover the latest things in pop culture, whether it be Star Wars, Marvel, DC, AEW, and everything else in between. You can listen to the show every Monday on Adobe Howl at 7 p.m. Eastern, or find it anywhere you find podcasts after it debuts on the radio station.
Coming back for another segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast, and it is time to recap one of our favorite shows here at the ODPH.
Yes.
And one that unfortunately is on its final season.
Yes.
But is going out in a big way, and that is what pad?
Star Wars The Bad Batch.
Yes, the animated story taking place in the Star Wars universe on Disney+ has been nothing but a big win with Dee Bradley Baker being all the members of the Bad Batch.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody is not familiar with the Batch, Pat, how would you describe it?
They are a group of clones that had some, They had some things go wrong when it came to, you know, the creation of said clones. But the Kaminoans turned around and went, hey, you know what? Let's not get rid of them. We might be able to use this to our advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a special group of clones that when it came too tough for the regular batch of clones or even the ARC troopers or whatever else, you know what? Why don't we send these guys in? They're special unit, the SEAL Team 6, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So now their adventure has led them into a very interesting place going into their final season.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to be recapping the latest episode entitled The Return.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously you heard last segment, we do our spoiler-free talk, give you that countdown, then it's deep dive into the spoiler conversation. So that being said, Pat, give me your spoiler-free statement on The Return.
Episode was fine. Felt like kind of an in-between. You know, we're getting from one part of the plot of this season to the other. Kind of a little bit filler, but as I've said with Star Wars in the past, what feels like filler probably is going to come back to play a factor later on in the season. So while there wasn't too much going on, you know, excitement or action-wise for this episode, I feel like it'll have a payoff by the end of the season.
I don't want to say filler.
It was a little bit.
But it felt like a filler episode.
A little bit.
Which is okay, because obviously, with the amount of stories that they're doing for this 15 episodes,
mm-hmm.
not everything is going to be connected.
Yep.
Which is fine, because this gives a little break in the story to catch up, because obviously, since they've come back, Well, anytime you mention about a certain emperor and a certain project that he's involved in, they came out the gates swinging for the fences and definitely hit.
Uh-huh.
So now, having to catch up a little bit, they understand the audience needs to process what happened. So this was a nice, quiet return to a stat quo, so to speak, no pun intended. But it definitely hit its mark what it needed to do. It was a fun episode. It was a good episode. It's one that's definitely worth the watch.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, Pad, let's get into that spoiler talk in 3, 2, 1. How'd you really feel?
Thought the episode was fine. You know, a little bit predictable in certain aspects, but I still enjoyed it. Interested to see kind of maybe some repercussions we might get out of this episode and some of the things that happened. You know, it was cool to see some of the character building. I will admit, I thought the title was a little bit of going to be a little bit of a red herring, that we were going to get a return of a certain clone that died at the end of the last season, because the whole thing, you know, we didn't see a body. Are they really dead? So I'm like, oh, we're going to get that maybe? Didn't happen. But no, I thought the episode was fine. You know, interested to see where they go, because that's the thing with Filoni's storytelling, and he is involved creatively with this. He is the, you know, the Kevin Feige, if you will, of the Star Wars universe. You know, they gave you the big tease, and they gave you kind of the main core, a tease of the main course. You got to sniff and see what it smells like. Well, with episode 3 and mentioning Project Necromancer.
Yes.
You know, and going, oh shit. You know, because as we record, that's the highest rated episode of the season thus far on IMDb over for the Bad Batch season 3. But they gave you kind of like a tease of the main course. You got to wait to get there. You don't start off like a five course meal with the main course.
Mm-hmm.
You got to work up to it.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you can't just go running into this. And this is something that they played very well with this.
Yeah.
So I can't fault them on that.
Yeah.
And especially to coming off the heels of a very big opening arc,
mm-hmm.
they had to really play their roles and really kind of emphasize on that.
And like you said, it's a 15-episode season, you know, so they have some time. You know, the episodes are running all the way through. The season or series finale, I should say, is on May 1st. You know, we're sitting here at the beginning of March. We have a whole other month plus, you know, essentially 2 months before the end of this season and the end of the series. So there's going to be a little bit of a slow burn going on.
Yeah, which is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
So that being said, I mean, obviously this episode kind of kicks off a little bit slow.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously we have Crosshair,
yep.
who has been...
estranged.
Yes, thank you.
To put it mildly.
Yes, because obviously doing a little bit of betrayal is not going to win over the hearts of everybody.
Order 66 went down. Most of the... Most of the crew in the Bad Batch didn't agree with what the Empire was selling because they didn't have the chips.
Mm-hmm.
Crosshair bought into what they were selling.
Yeah.
And that's the easiest simplification I can put.
Yeah, so it was a little tensious between the Batch, to say the least.
Because there was a solid season and a half, maybe almost two. He was on the hunt for them, and they were running from him. So, yeah, a little tensious.
Yeah, I would say so. Even though Omega had been really trying to encourage everything to be peaceful, it still was, it's kind of so-so.
Yeah.
But Echo returns to Pabu.
Mm-hmm.
And what is so significant about this?
So Echo is one of the last remaining clones from the D-Squad. They were D-Squad in the original season of Clone Wars. There was him, Heavy, Cutter, and Fives. Echo is one of the last, if not the last one remaining of that. Thought he was dead for a while, but now he's back. He's working with Captain Rex and some other folks. We see them later on down the road in Rebels. They're working together to hopefully save some clones that are behind enemy lines, so to speak, and get them out of harm's way.
Yeah, because they're all located around Mount Tantus.
Mm-hmm.
So with everybody trying to go to find out more information, Crosshair kind of throws in an idea about how to do this.
Yeah, because they're having issues getting the information they need. You know, it'd be real easy to get the information and decode it or whatever if we just got to an Imperial computer, so to speak. But then the issue is, well, they're kind of wanted by the Empire. They're kind of recognizable, seeing as they all look alike. But then, like you said, Crosshair comes up with the idea, well, why don't we go find Imperial computer to plug into.
Yeah, and he just happens to know one.
Oh, convenient enough.
Yes, and where is that located, Pad?
That would be on the planet he was formerly posted at, Barton 4.
Yes. So the Batch makes their way to his old post.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get there, well, the post is empty. It's abandoned.
Yeah, looking like Hoth from Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, that was the first thing that struck my mind, which
made Hoth look pleasant.
Yes. So the group has to kind of reroute their original thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that they have to go steal power from its defenses.
Because the what little power they have left is really getting drained out by the defenses. And they're like, oh, we got to go reroute this. Soon as they did this, I realized, like, oh, shit, those weren't shields. Or they thought they were sensor beacons. Mm-hmm. I went, oh, those aren't sensor beacons. Realized almost immediately.
Yeah, they're shields. Because, well, if you are running mm-hmm. defenses in an empty base,
mm-hmm.
that means something's lurking around.
No, that means you're trying to keep something out.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the Batch finds out the hard way.
Mm-hmm.
Because once they let those shields down, a huge creature
mm-hmm.
is now making its way through the frozen tundra of Barton 4.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing looked amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, kudos to the special effects team and animation team here.
Called, and this is thanks to the folks over at the Star Wars fandom page, a worm, WYRM.
Yes, and this thing was monstrous.
Yeah.
So, obviously, the Batch has to figure out how to slow it down.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's having a little problem with their hands
mm-hmm.
and shooting, and who would that be, Pat?
That'd be Crosshair.
Yes. He is still not coming to terms with what he's done, and it's really affected his confidence, which I like about it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is they've all got each one of the clones in the Bad Batch has a particular set of skills, if you will, that they're adept at more than others. You know, strength, brains, technology, whatever else. Crosshair is like the sniper of the group, if you could, in the marksman of the group, if you could not tell by the tattoo he has over his one eye, that is a literal crosshair.
Mm-hmm.
But earlier in the episode, when he's just kind of making sure his skills are up to task and they're up to hone, he's doing target practice, and the one droid says, once he gets done with target practice, the droid makes a comment how his accuracy was only 53%, which was, quote, far below your usual standard.
Mm-hmm. Not helping matters.
Nope.
No, but they somehow pull it together when they have to.
Mm-hmm.
They get the creature outside.
Yep.
And then they activate the backup power.
Mm-hmm.
So thus, they're allowed to go do their work, even though it was getting a little crazy just because this creature was moving fast.
Oh, yeah. They reminded me a little bit of the worms from Dune, if I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, like that was the kind of vibe they went with. I mean, ironic timing. Because obviously I don't think they were planning on Dune coming out the same time this was.
Probably not.
But very similar in that sci-fi aspect, which mm-hmm. I do like about it. So once they get into business, and this is where kind of was a proving ground for Crosshair too.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, it was very centric on his character. He winds up winning over everybody and their trust back.
Right, because there is a little bit of a confrontation between Hunter, the leader of the group, and Crosshair. Because Hunter knows that, like, listen, you're not telling us the whole... he's like, I've known you long enough. They've known each other since birth. I've known you long enough. I know you're not being 100% honest with us. Like, why? What happened for you to get to go from in the Empire's pocket and their lackey to all of a sudden you're arrested by them? Like, what really happened?
Yeah.
And he tells the story and he goes, listen, I killed an Imperial officer, and then I betrayed them after they betrayed me. And he goes on to further, like, kind of throw the onus in Hunter's lap. Like, listen, I risked my life to say in everything I had to send you a message from here, and you ignored it.
Mm-hmm.
Cutting the tension with a knife.
Yeah. So to see them now all back on the same page is big.
The other thing, too, is, and I love the writing. I love the way the characters are being portrayed. He then further twists the proverbial knife in Hunter's ribcage, if you will, by going, I don't think you're angry because I'm back. I think you're angry because I rescued Omega and you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. Let me check. No lies detected.
Yeah. So it was building some tension with him, which they had to do because obviously, even though he's won their trust back,
You can't go from brothers to mortal enemies, so to speak.
Yeah.
With you know, turning on your brothers, because that's what all the clones from the establishment from the first season of The Clone Wars up through now, the clones consider each other brothers,
mm-hmm.
you know, and in Omega's case, sister. But no, they consider you can't go from being basically family to turning on your family. somewhere Dominic Toretto is cringing.
Yes.
You know, and then all of a sudden, hey guys, I'm back. Sorry, I had a change of heart and like things not blow up a little bit.
Not everybody is the Shield. They cannot all be Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and John Moxley, damn it. But we do see that, yeah, the tension is still there, but at least there's the uneasy trust. It's getting won back over. But yeah. Obviously, the mission was a success. They did get the information they needed from the computer terminal.
I get the feeling, though, that's going to come back to bite them in the ass.
Oh, I do, too, because I think that it almost felt like they were walking into a trap.
Well, and the other thing, too, is you have to figure, because everything is interconnected, and I'm not talking about the Star Wars mythos, because, well, yes, that's true. But in terms of, like, plugging into the Imperial network, you have to figure at a base where there's literally nothing going on, that everything has been removed except for, obviously, the stuff that's there. But all of the actual physical people are gone, to all of a sudden get an access to Imperial records, you know, which is all centrally located. It's all in one place. To get a connection and get a pickup from there, I can't help but think that's not going to go unnoticed.
Oh, of course. No, I think it's going to tip off the Empire.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is, unfortunately, the beginning of the end.
Could be.
Because as smart as the Batch has been, this almost was telegraphed, and you have to wonder, is Crosshair's intentions really that good? Or, you know, there is that little seed of deceit that you can plant.
I mean, we could also get some bounty hunters showing up.
I'm saying, if you get the goat, I mean, he's due.
Yeah, no, you could. Boba Fett, still around in this time. We know Cad Bane, still around in this time.
Yeah, so.
We get a Bosk, IG-88. There's a list.
I was going to say, no Chopper, though.
Listen, we said bounty hunters, not war criminals.
Yes, just want to emphasize that, too. Chopper is a war criminal. But nevertheless, so they get their information, and then with that information, the plan is set forth.
Yeah.
They're going to Mount Tantus.
Uh-huh.
They're going to the base, and they're going to set anybody free that's still there.
Yep.
And that's how the show ends.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I think they hit their mark. I mean,
it's clearly setting up for what the next arc or portion of the season is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, obviously, I don't think it's going to go the duration of the 10 episodes.
No.
But I think it will at least set up for that middle arc, and then whatever is going to happen at the end is going to be the end.
Clearly, and I mean, clearly, the episode titles for each of the episodes are out, so we can clearly tell. Next week is a two-episode week. You've got episode 6, which is going to be Infiltration.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly obvious what that's going to be about. Episode 7, Extraction. Fairly obvious what that's going to be about, but then it's what comes after, because nothing in these stories is ever clear cut as like beginning, middle, end, and we're done.
Mm-hmm. But the only thing you can definitely say is the attack on Mount Tantus is next week, and it's going to be a double doozy because if they're going back to back, they want to hammer that story out and not leave anything hanging.
They're going back to back in the middle of March.
Yeah, they're not going to.
I can understand it if this was like May the 4th. Like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Or even May the 5th. You know, Revenge of the 5th. You know, I can understand that, but no, this is the middle of March, and they're doing two episodes. It's going to be big.
Yeah, they're not going to leave anything hanging on the cutting room floor. They're going to literally just leave it all on the table and just really just give the fans something big to talk about.
Uh-huh.
So that being said, hit us up on that hashtag ODPHpod. What is your thoughts on Star Wars The Bad Batch? Episode 5 entitled The Return. Let's have that discussion, shall we? We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hi guys, this is Mac Room. I'm the writer of Inferno Girl Red, and you're listening to the ODPH podcast.
Coming back for the final segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast, Pad, what you got?
Got a couple things to talk about. The first of which shocked me a little bit, although not too much, but it certainly shocked the internet. And that was because it was announced today that after 21 years, the company Rooster Teeth is shutting down after 21 years.
Wow.
So if you're not familiar with Rooster Teeth, they made Red versus Blue way back in the day. They also made shows like Genlock, Ruby, a whole bunch of other things. But reading from an article on Variety.com, it says, quote, Rooster Teeth is biting the dust after more than two decades. Parent company Warner Brothers Discovery, after unsuccessful attempts to sell the unprofitable fandom, gaming, and comedy entertainment division, is shutting down Rooster Teeth's operations. RT General Manager Jordan Levin announced the shutdown of Austin-based Rooster Teeth at an all-hands meeting Wednesday and in a memo distributed to staff. The closure of Rooster Teeth will result in layoffs of its approximately 150 full-time employees and will throw dozens of contractors and content creators out of work as well. Quote, "It's with a heavy heart I announce that Rooster Teeth is shutting down due to challenges facing digital media resulting from fundamental shifts in consumer behavior and monetization across platforms, advertising, and patronage," Levin wrote in the memo, obtained by Variety. "Our legacy is not just a collection of content, but a history of pixels burned into our screens, minds, and hearts," close quote. Warner Brothers Discovery is currently in talks to sell the rights to certain Rooster Teeth catalog content and intellectual property, such as the popular anime-style series Ruby, pioneering sci-fi spoof Red vs. Blue, and Michael B. Jordan's animated mecha series Genlock. In addition, WBD is seeking to sell the Roost Podcast Network, with shows spanning gaming, true crime, fandom, comedy, and food, which for the time being will continue to operate. Quote, "Warner Brothers Discovery thanks Rooster Teeth's groundbreaking creators and partners and the strong management team for their many years of success," the media company said in a statement. "Your passionate and loyal fans are testament to your achievements," close quote. So this has definitely caught me by surprise because they just celebrated their 20th birthday last year. You know, I wasn't around and I didn't watch all of the years. I was aware of Red vs. Blue, but I wasn't a Halo fan because I didn't have an Xbox when that came out. So I really didn't watch it. But I really got into them around 2010, 2011 and watched for, you know, 10 years or whatever. You know, but kind of saw it coming in a sense because, you know, they started to change and shift some stuff around. And that's where my interest had fallen off. So I hadn't watched a lot of their stuff in a few years. But I still kept an eye on it. You know, old friends and whatnot. You want to keep an eye on how they're doing and whatnot. And once they started, you know, taking some of their original content, because the early seasons of Ruby were posted on both their own website and YouTube. Mm-hmm. And the same is true for Red versus Blue. Once they started pulling the stuff from YouTube and putting it exclusively behind the paywall on their site, because they had this arguably first of its kind subscription service called First, you know, which was basically you paid, I think it was like $5 a month. There was some content you could only watch if you were a First member. So shows and whatever else. And then you would get some of their public release stuff. At one point it was like a week early. And then I know it was like a couple days and then it was like 24 hours early. Mm-hmm. The other thing it gave you too was they've got the Roost Podcast Network, which is the overarching umbrella, I guess you could say, they have for their podcasts. You know, you could get ad free versions through an RSS feed of their podcast, which, you know, which made sense.
Right.
You know, but once they started taking Ruby and Red versus Blue and pulling them off of YouTube because, oh, they don't really make a whole lot of, you know, we don't get a whole lot of views off them anymore. And they were kind of really driving views and traffic towards their site. I kind of had a feeling something was going on. The other thing that I noticed too was they would do, you know, membership drives, for lack of a better term, for their First subscription service, where I know at one point they did a nonstop Uno live stream with like actual games of Uno, where like they streamed Uno for, I think it was somewhere like over 36 hours straight or something absurd. Wow. Like not the same people. They would like rotate.
They rotate in and out.
They rotated in and out so people could eat and sleep. But then once they were doing that, but the thing, the article on variety.com does go on to say is, quote, Rooster Teeth had operated a subscription video on demand service from its earliest days. And in 2016 rebranded the services First. At its peak, Rooster Teeth First had about 225,000 paying members at the height of the popularity of Ruby and Genlock, but has fallen off to about 60,000 today. Warner Brothers Discovery will be communicating with subscribers within the next few weeks about the service's shutdown, close quote. So, you know, all that said, I kind of had a feeling some of this was coming, you know, so a little shocked it happened and also not at the same time. It's, you know, and I'm not going to get into who to blame and who's at fault. That's a whole discussion for a whole other day.
Sure.
The main thing is right now there's 150 people or more who are now out of a job,
yeah.
You know, and the job market, especially for content creation and behind the scenes work for media, is a little rough these days, you know, with everybody cutting jobs, video games, you know, multimedia companies. So The thing I say to anyone, if you are here somehow hearing this, that has lost your job as a result of this, I am sorry for you.
Yeah.
I hope you bounce back on your feet very quickly. And to anyone listening to the show who is, you know, a recruiter or an HR rep, if you see somebody's name come across your wire with that company in their resume, definitely give them a look, because there's a lot of folks behind the scenes who do a lot of did a lot of talented, great work.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. I mean, this is sad news to see. Like, since I've been doing, you know, anime stuff and like and watching that, like Rooster Teeth has always been a part of it.
Yeah.
Even when we've gone to New York Comic Con, like a little peek behind the curtain.
Yeah.
That's always been a stop for us.
Oh, yeah. I got a couple shirts and I bought they had the card game Million Dollars Butt, which is kind of like Cards Against Humanity. But what would you or do or not do for $1 million?
Yeah. So,
you know, so like I've been a like I said, I've been a fan of them for 10 years. To see it finally end is bittersweet and kind of crazy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's the one thing. And we just hope everybody that, you know, unfortunately is going to be out of a job bounces back soon. I mean, yeah. There's so many talented people that work there. It's just like it's just sad, because especially when you make it like, you know, 20 years.
20 years and on the Internet.
Yeah, and like I say, in this day and age, like it's unheard of almost.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
definitely sad news to hear, and just keeping good thoughts for everybody involved.
Yes. Then we're going to switch over to some streaming news, because Shogun on FX / Hulu. If you are not watching this, boy, you're one of the few who's not, because A, this show is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Only two episodes are out. I think the third one comes out. The third episode comes out tomorrow as we record. I think it comes out on Thursdays. But regardless, reading from an article on the HollywoodReporter.com, it's getting big numbers.
Yes.
The article says, quote, "The premiere of FX's Shogun delivered a sizable streaming audience worldwide to go along with solid on-air numbers in the United States. Over its first 6 days of release, the limited series first episode, based on James Clavell's best-selling 1975 novel, gathered 9 million streaming views globally on Hulu and Disney Plus and Star Plus. With view defined by the now standard formula of total viewing time divided by running time. According to Disney, that's the best worldwide debut to date for a Disney General Entertainment scripted series, i.e. one that doesn't fall under the Marvel, Star Wars, Disney-branded TV, Pixar, or National Geographic banners. Domestically, the premiere episode of Shogun also scored the best streaming debut for an FX show on Hulu, with an assist from Disney+, edging out the season 2 opener of The Bear. Outside of the United States, Shogun topped season 1 of The Kardashians as the top Disney General Entertainment series premiere. The 9 million streaming views for the Shogun premiere equates to about 630 million minutes of viewing time, or 10.5 million hours for the 70-minute episode. The streaming numbers for Shogun come on the heels of a promising on-air debut for FX on February 27th. The first episode averaged 764,000 same-day viewers, and the second, which premiered at 11:38 p.m. Eastern, drew 442,000 people. That's ahead of the recent season premieres for Fargo, 566,000 and 311,000 viewers for two episodes. In November, an American Horror Story, which did 454,000 viewers for a single episode in September, close quote. So a lot of people tuning in, myself included.
Yeah, this show has got a lot of word of mouth. I unfortunately am part of the group that has not seen it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Reasons? I mean, it's a lot going on. It's on the list, but there's a lot of stuff interview-wise that's coming the way of the ODPH and Nerd Initiative that unfortunately has taken up time this week. So
fantastic show, though. It's on Hulu and Disney Plus. If you got the Hulu Disney Plus thing, whatever it is, definitely give it a watch. It's fan fucking tastic.
Yeah, I'm excited to go check it out.
Speaking of Disney Plus, we got the episode dates and episode titles for the upcoming X-Men 97 TV
Let's
series.
Go.
And I gotta say, I love the way they did this, making it look like an old TV guide from back in the
90s. Yeah, I was gonna say, I love this poster.
So the episodes are, on March 20th, we get a 2-episode premiere. The first episode titled, To Me, My X-Men, and Mutant Liberation Begins. Then March 27th, the next episode premieres. This would be episode 3, titled Fire Made Flesh. Then on April 3rd, the episode is titled Motendo / Life Death, Part 1. April 10th, the episode is titled Remember It. April 17th, Life Death, Part 2. April 24th, the episode is titled Bright Eyes. May 1st, the episode is titled Tolerance is Extinction, Part 1. Then May 8th is Tolerance is Extinction, Part 2. And then the season finale, May 15th, Tolerance is Extinction, Part 3.
I'm just trying to think about what stories they could be doing.
Well, I know the first episode, because it's been reported, is going to like bridge the gap from the end of the first series up to now and kind of what the characters have been up to in that time.
Okay. Because, I mean, that's the one thing, because Xavier, I mean...
Spoiler alert, but it was 30 years ago at this point.
Yeah, so...
Xavier died in the TV series.
Right. So Magneto would be running the X-Men, which, I mean, they've done in the comics previously.
Mm-hmm.
Most notably around X-Men 200.
Right.
So it's not to say they wouldn't be going around that kind of storyline. Life Death is a very familiar story, if I'm thinking correctly.
Say, right? It rings a bell.
Yeah, for some reason, Legion is screaming to be involved, or Proteus. But like I said, it's been a while since I've gone down
the... Oh, it's Chris Claremont. I did a Google search.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
I was going to say, I believe that it's got to be Proteus or Legion involved.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while. Obviously, we can obviously hashtag it on ODPH and talk about it, too. But yeah, because Life Death is the one story that kind of reminds me a little bit, is kind of clicking a bit. But yeah, the other stories, Tolerance is Extinction 2, not Grant Morrison run, but it's a notable one too.
Yeah.
So a lot of stuff to be excited about. I'm super excited to go back to 97.
Oh, me too.
It's one of the best animated shows they've ever done involving comics. I mean, it's not Batman the Animated Series, but for Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of their best.
It's one of the greatest intros in television history.
Yep, and they also pulled off something that the live action has never been able to do. And
despite two attempts.
Dark Phoenix Saga. It actually works on this format. So
yeah.
I am very, very excited to see
it. Arguably about the same amount of runtime as the movies, too.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, they were smart about it because
They did five episodes.
Yeah, a little peek behind the curtain. They went and they had... five episodes, and they spread it out, so they didn't rush it.
Right.
And they hit the key points. They didn't spend a ton going on
with Jean?
With Jean and the Hellfire Club, so to speak. Like, it wasn't...
Although they didn't call it the Hellfire Club on the show because, hey, kids TV.
Yeah, I was going to say...
They called it the Circle Club?
Yeah, they called it something like that.
It was the 90s. It was the dreaded censors.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd have seen the Animaniacs, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So definitely some exciting stuff. Oh, Life Death. Okay, that's with Storm.
Ah.
Storm and Forge.
Gotcha.
Okay. All right. So yeah, no, that's Chris Claremont.
Yep.
Yeah, I haven't read it in a while, but yeah, okay, so that's going to be a Storm-centric story.
Something tells me if you have Marvel Unlimited, the next couple of weeks, that will be showing up on the main page.
I fully will bank you this. Not that our fine friends at Marvel have told me anything, because they have not. I don't doubt they put together a reading list for it.
Probably.
And I know they're going to definitely have that on there. Like
they're
I
usually,
say,
they're usually pretty, when it comes to stuff coming out for the television or movie side of things, they're usually pretty good about that.
Yeah. So super excited to check this out. Like I say, it's one of the best shows that they ever did with Marvel. So if they're bringing it back, they've taken their time with it. There's a lot of stuff to be excited about.
Then switching over to the Netflix side of things, Netflix is doubling down on Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Oh?
Yeah, so the live-action series that premiered about 3 weeks ago or so now. Reading from an article on thehollywoodreporter.com, this article says, quote, the streamer has renewed the lavish live-action adaptation of the Nickelodeon series for two more seasons. The order will conclude the story of Aang's journey to become the Avatar in fantastical world. Since the show's February 22nd debut, the series has been Netflix's top English-language TV show with 41.1 million views, according to the streamer. While the first season was 8 episodes, there's no word yet on the episode count of the final two seasons. Netflix has done double season renewals before on shows like Emily in Paris and Stranger Things, but this might be the first time the streamer has ordered two seasons to close out a series. The Avatar animated series likewise told its story across three seasons, close quote. So I don't know if it's necessarily going to be the end. Presumably, I mean, if they follow the shows or the cartoons plotline, that's the end. And presumably by the artwork they released, it's following that in terms of the book names. Book 2 is titled Earth, Book 3 is titled Fire. But I could see them maybe stretching it out if they want to go a couple more, but we'll have to wait and see.
Just the fact that it got renewed for two seasons.
And if you haven't seen the video they put out with Daniel Day Kim telling the cast, holy shit, there's a reason that man's an actor.
Yes.
Oh my God, check that video out.
It's a great video, but it's a big win for them because obviously... Netflix in recent years has been very quick to not renew in certain shows.
Yeah, that's true.
So big win for them.
Yeah. And then switching to over to HBO Max real quick, we did get a release date for the upcoming second season of The House of the Dragon season 2. And that is coming out in June 2024.
Oh, that's earlier than expected.
A lot earlier than expected.
Yeah, because I remember hearing that it was going to be a full calendar year and then...
Yeah, and then like early next year.
Yeah, so that's...
They're ahead of schedule.
Good.
And oh, by the way, dropping in a month on Prime Video is the Fallout TV series, which is sneaking up on everybody.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, there's some stuff. I mean, thank God the strike is over.
Yeah.
Everybody is now flooding the market with stuff, which is good, especially if you're an entertainment podcast. But in general, though, like we say, House of the Dragon, phenomenal first season.
Oh, my God, incredible season.
Matt Smith is still the MVP. Yes. I will argue with anybody about that on the internet. And just to see them get season 2 up and running as quick as they did, that's big.
Yeah.
So, super excited to go see where we pick back up in the land of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and then one last bit of news that I am super happy for, and I know you are super happy for. We got a little bit of casting for the James Gunn Superman movie.
I love this casting.
And oh, by the way, that's the new title of the movie. It's not Superman Legacy. It's just Superman.
As it should be.
Yeah. But we got the news that, reading from an article on HollywoodReporter.com, quote, "Great Caesar's ghost, Perry White has been found. Wendell Pierce, perhaps best known for his work as a detective on HBO's seminal crime series, The Wire, has been cast as the iconic editor-in-chief of the Daily Planet in James Gunn's Superman. The new feature, based on the DC Comics character, began rolling in Atlanta on Thursday. It was previously titled Superman Legacy. David Cornsweet is starring as Clark Kent slash Superman, with Rachel Brosnahan playing Daily Planet reporter Lois Lane. The cast also includes Nicholas Holt as classic villain Lex Luthor," close quote. Other interesting note, Nicholas Holt is a Smallville fan, which means he is a fan of, in my opinion, the best iteration of Lex Luthor, which is Michael Rosenbaum's. So if we get a little bit of Rosenbaum-style action in this movie, fucking give it to me.
I'm just going to say this right now. James Gunn knows what he's doing.
Yes, he does.
He has hit note after note with all the casting he's done.
Uh-huh.
So I think, I mean, one, I love the casting.
Oh, I do too.
I love this casting.
Yeah, no, I saw that. I was like, oh, yes, please.
Yes. And I know that there's a couple more that have been rumored to be tagged along.
Yep.
But initial things coming out, like I say, he has not misfired once. I'm even hearing about the rumor about Dua Lipa, the singer, is going to be cast in the movie.
Uh-huh.
Two words, Cat Grant.
Ooh. Okay.
I'm like, listen, that would make a ton of sense. I was hearing a lot of rumors, so I'll speculate rumors that she was going to be involved in the movie. I'm going to tell you right now, I think she would knock it out of the park as Cat Grant.
Yeah, she would. I've seen some of her stuff in terms of acting. Not bad.
Yeah, but cannot speak highly enough about the casting job here. Absolutely am super, super excited about this.
Yeah.
I like I say, for everybody that's talking about superhero fatigue and all this, when you take the time, cast it right, and let the story run for itself, there's a lot of big win to be had. So I think that that's just something as fans we got to just be continuously excited about.
I'm just super excited to see what he does for this take on Superman, because let's face it, it's a character that's been around, you know, what is it, like 80-some-odd years now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen how many movies, how many TV shows, cartoons, TV movies, streaming movies, whatever else. But, like, just some of the stuff, like, because he's always a close-to-the-vest kind of guy. But, like, he shared a post on Threads today where he said, "Where do I start? Superman." And then he shared a couple photos, the first of which being, like, the OG costume from, like, way back in the day. Then there's this
All-Star
Superman with the girl trying to jump off the building and Superman stops her. Then you've got him, another panel there. So it looks like it's from the Max, from the cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And then another panel at the Fortress of Solitude. So like, I'm very interested to see where he goes with this.
And he has, I know everybody is saying Kingdom Come.
That's what the logo looks like.
Well, the symbol is, but that's not it though.
Right.
But I like I say, the one thing is Gunn understands the universe. I did see the Grant Morrison Action Comics in there. I'm a little frightened by that one.
There'd be Batman or Superman, the animated series panel there. Yep. No, the man is clearly a fan.
Well, he understands. Like, this is the one thing with comic movies and comic shows in general.
Mm-hmm.
If you read the comics, You understand the characters. You understand the stories.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be a fan to be passionate about it.
This is true.
And if you're not, you're doing this all wrong, because when you have not followed along to the character's core,
right,
you have not followed the story's core,
right,
you're missing the point. And that's why you have movies that bomb badly.
Uh-huh.
I don't have to name names, but I know that when we're hearing reports, allegedlys, mm-hmm. about people not reading the comics, not understanding the characters and all X, Y, and Zs, mm-hmm. and this is not just the one that recently came out. We're talking about previous ones, too. That's the disconnect, and that's why it doesn't come off on screen, because the one thing comic fans do is overanalyze everything.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me when I'm lying. This is a situation that if you really want to pull off a comic book movie, especially one with the hype behind it, with one of the most iconic characters of pop culture,
mm-hmm.
you have to be a fan. Gunn has done this, and every casting he's done, and especially now with Wendell Pierce joining,
yeah,
he knows what he's doing. I cannot wait to be sitting in a theater watching this.
And we got some breaking news, too.
Wait, they didn't wait till after the show?
No, they didn't wait till after the show. Joining the upcoming Karate Kid film, alongside Ben Wang, Jackie Chan, and Ralph Macchio, Ming-Na Wen.
Oh, let's go!
You want to talk about somebody who is tailor-made for that movie.
Love this.
Yes.
Love that casting, too. A lot of good stuff breaking.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Such good time to be, getting back in the movies and
stuff. Yes.
But before we get out of here, we got some comic stuff to talk about. In fact, I got one little follow-up note for before we get into the dive.
Mm-hmm.
And coming from our fine friends over at Marvel, it has been announced X-Men 35 is going to be the legacy number 700 of Uncanny X-Men.
Ooh.
So this will be a monumental issue to go pick up when it drops. And the names attached to it,
mm-hmm.
is an all-star lineup like you can't even put together. Jerry Dugan, Kieran Gillen, Al Ewing,
mm-hmm.
Chris Claremont, Gail Simone, Phil Noto, Joshua Carasa,
mm-hmm.
Lucas Winrich, Jerome Opia, Stefano Caselli,
mm-hmm.
Walter Simonson, and Leanne Francis Yu, and more. And the cover by Pepe Larraz. Oh, my God. Just like I say, it's a perfect homage,
right,
to the X-Men history. Like, I'm showing Pad the cover now.
Ooh, that's
it's a wraparound one. This looks dope. This is going to be dropping on June 5th at the comic shops. So like I say, I apologize if I messed up anybody's name. I'm super excited reading this, because this is going to be the official end of the Krakoan era. It has to be with the hype going into this. And even reading a little snippet here from the press release, quote, all good things must come to an end, and a good thing as the Krakoan era has been for mutant kind, time has come to at last. The tragedy and triumph of the fall of the House of X, the madness and mystery of the rise of the powers of 10, they have all come to end, and this leads us to the moment that will change the future of mutant kind for years to come, end quote. Oh, I am I can't really put into words how amped up I am about this. Just because I love the X-Men line. I love what they've done with Krakoa. Like, I know it's very polarizing in certain aspects, but I will always take a fresh take with a story. I'm fearing how it's going to end, but I have an idea,
mm-hmm.
and we'll cross that bridge if it comes to it. I hope I'm wrong, but we'll talk about it at a later date. But just this issue and the creative team behind it, like I say, I know they're going to be diving into different historical areas, mm-hmm. With Kieran Gillen writing too. Like I say, he's doing Rise of the Powers of 10 right now. Jerry Dugan's been tagged to the X-Men line. You know him from certain other Marvel books that you're a very big fan of.
Invincible Iron Man.
Yep. Al Ewing, Chris Claremont. Gail Simone is tagged with this too. Like, this is already Take My Money now.
Right.
So I am super excited, and I know some stories are going to be coming out of this one. So definitely want to keep an eye out for this and go to your comic shops and definitely make sure this is on your pull list. But speaking of what should be on your pull list this week, Pat.
So the first of which is from Marvel. It is The Spectacular Spider-Man, issue number one, from Greg Weisman and Humberto Ramos.
Yes.
This one reads, quote, the star of two of Marvel's biggest series come together in their first ongoing series ever. That's right. Peter Parker and Miles Morales are going to team up on the regular, comparing notes and using said notes to take on some of the most dangerous bad guys. This duo is better than dynamic, amazing, sensational, superior. They're spectacular. And with Greg Weisman, writer of the fan favorite animated Spectacular Spider-Man series, returning to Spidey along with Spider legend Humberto Ramos, you know it's going to be epic. So yeah, I'm super excited for this, because if you have not seen the Spectacular Spider-Man animated series, when it was on TV from 2009 through 2008, only got two seasons, criminally, because the cast in this show is absolutely nuts. Joshua Keaton was Spider-Man. Gray Griffin is in the show as well. Vanessa Marshall voices Mary Jane Watson.
Okay.
James Arnold Taylor is Harry Osborn. Clancy Brown is George Stacy.
I'll take my money.
Steve Blum is the Green Goblin, and arguably one of the better Green Goblins, I gotta say. Phil LaMarr is in it as well, along with John DiMaggio as Hammerhead. Kevin Michael Richardson is Tombstone. Like, the show is just phenomenal, and Greg Weisman was like the showrunner of such on the show. So him coming back to Spider-Man should be fairly good, I would say.
Yeah, we definitely say so.
Then also from the folks over at Marvel, Weapon X-Men issue number 1 from Christos and Gage. This one reads, quote, "A multiverse of Logans bands together. In original X-Men, you saw the Phoenix recruit the young X-Men to fight yet another time-displaced disaster. But now the threat is deadlier than ever, and it's time to call in the X-Men's big guns. He's the best there is at what he does in every universe he does it in. And this job is too big for just one of him. Wolverines from across the multiverse converge to take on a foe even the Phoenix fears. But with friends like Zombie Wolverine, who needs enemies?" Christos Gage and Yildiri Senar kick off an action-packed epic.
Yeah, this one looks absolutely insane. I'm meaning to go check this out. I know Lauren from Nerd Initiative and Hops Geeks News did the review on this.
Right.
Spoke very, very highly about this. But yeah, this just looks absolutely insane.
Looks nuts.
Yeah, which, I mean, I don't mind from the X-Men line every now and then.
Yeah.
Definitely got to say that.
Then you got Captain America, issue number 7 from J. Michael Straczynski. The fight for life. Just when Steve Rogers believes the fight against Asmodee is won, he meets a strange new ally named Lila, guardian of the mysterious front door cabaret, and learns that Asmodee's defeat has unleashed a new threat that only Steve can stand against. A bold new arc that will send ripples across the Marvel Universe begins here. I've been digging this run. It's not been anything like super crazy or like super, oh my God, this is world changing, but it's been fun.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing about it. Like, I have not checked it out.
Super fun, down to earth, nothing crazy yet, although based on that cover, that's going to change very quickly.
Yeah, I would say so.
So it should be a fun read. Then also you've got Star Wars issue number 44. And Ken, who is writing Star Wars still?
Is it Charles Soule?
It is, so that means it's still going to be good. And the description of this is The Trial of Lando Calrissian.
Oh.
After the events of Dark Droids, Lando is at a crossroads. Saving his friend Lobot has cost him more than he expected, as now Admiral Ackbar and Mon Mothma are putting Lando on trial.
Is it a trap?
Could be. With the rebellion locked in the battle with the Empire, how will this trial's end impact the rebellion's future? Close quotes. I mean, obviously this takes place between episodes 5 and 6, so you kind of have an idea what's going to happen, but hey, it's fun to read nonetheless.
Oh, absolutely.
Plus, it's Charles Soule.
Yeah.
Then you've got Star Wars The High Republic, issue number 4 from Kevin Scott. This one reads, quote, "Into the Nile Occlusion Zone. Jedi Master Keeve Trennis has disobeyed direct orders from Coruscant and entered Nihil space. Her mission? To find and save a soul who is thought lost. Familiar faces from phase 1 of Star Wars The High Republic return, but not as they used to be," close quote. And this cover is super amazing because it's a goddamn Jedi in space wearing a spacesuit wielding a lightsaber.
Mm.
What more do you need to know? Super interested to read this one because if you've been keeping up with the current run of Star Wars novels, the Occlusion Zone, kind of a big thing going on right now.
Yeah, I would say so.
We'll see what happens with this. I'm interested to read this one. And lastly, certainly not leastly, if you have not seen it, you've got Gargoyles Dark Ages, issue number 6 from Greg Weisman. This is, of course, a fleshing out of the first two episodes of the Gargoyles television series. It's the Dark Ages. It's the medieval times that we only got to see for like an episode and a half before things went to present and I use air quotes present when the show aired, was back in the 90s, but this fleshes out the story a little bit. The description of this reads, the gargoyles attempt to reason with a dragon, and the resulting battle, high stakes in the skies above Castle Wyvern, will change their destiny forever. The final chapter of The Gargoyles. Legendary origin story arrives in December from writer and Gargoyles creator Greg Weisman and artist Drew Moss. This 40-page issue includes a new text story from Weisman and all cards dot covers featuring art by Clayton Crane, Alan Kwa, Mirka Andolfo, Kenya Danino, Erica Henderson, and more. Super fun to read this and kind of, because like I said, Gargoyles was a fantastic show when it was on high. Please do a reboot that show or bring that show back like you did X-Men.
Mm.
But, the didn't get enough of the medieval stuff. And I'm not talking like the medieval stuff we got a little bit in season two when they kind of went traversing all over the world and through time.
Yeah.
But like just kind of like the origins and stuff didn't get nearly enough of that. But the fact we get a little bit fleshed out, I've enjoyed.
You can't go wrong with that. No. I mean, that's just something fun there.
Yeah.
All right. So for me, I got a lot this week.
Uh-oh.
This was top to bottom. All publishers really brought their A games. And this is one that, for me, I was sitting there going like, holy smokes. Like,
right.
This is a loaded, loaded week. First and foremost, Batman 145, Chip Zdarsky, Jorge Jimenez. Now everything is back from the Joker year one. And this is now the aftermath of Failsafe now asserting his dominance in Gotham.
Okay.
Batman is still locked up with the Joker and figuring out what is going on here. The story is absolutely bananas, and this does kind of have this tie-in to Absolute Power, in my opinion. So you heard us talk last week about it on the show. This is going to be one you want to keep an eye out for.
Gotcha.
So definitely want to recommend that. Also, DC, like I say, there's a bunch from DC this week. There is The Batman First Night. And now this is a Black Label book done by Dan Jurgens.
Really?
Yes, Superman fame. We know him. Very cool story. So if you want to try looking at something different of Batman, this is going to be one you want to have circled on your pull list. Also, Pad, are you reading Blue Beetle?
No.
Okay, you need to start.
Okay.
We've had the pleasure of talking with Josh Trujillo, who's the writer of Blue Beetle.
Right.
This is up your alley. Knowing you and knowing your fandom, you would love this series.
Hmm.
And if you want a great starting point, issue number 7 has just come out.
Okay.
So this is a tribute to the late Keith Giffen, who has left his imprint on DC Comics in many ways. Legion of Superheroes, he definitely had a historic run on that. Justice League International, which had Ted Kord and Booster Gold become the odd couple. And like that whole series is just a fun one. Like he was part of that. He's also known as the main man behind the main man as tied to Lobo.
Oh, okay.
So like I say,
I know that dude.
Yeah, his legacy in DC Comics is like one aspect too. Like I say, he's right. Just influential in all through comics. What they did here is Josh and the team got together with a lot of other creative names in comics. They did a tribute issue.
Okay.
And the story, you can jump in. Like, if you haven't read Blue Beetle for whatever reason, you can jump in this one. It's an entertaining one. It's Jaime Reyes and Booster Gold searching for Ted Kord in the time stream.
Okay.
It's fun. It captures Keith's, unique style of humor and drama and everything. I love this issue. I think that this is one that if you want to go check out something very cool, this is one you want to go get into. And honestly, if you have not picked up Blue Beetle, go into it. And like I say, I know Pad's reading habits. This is something that would be tailor-made for him.
Mm.
So if, like I say, I would give it a very, very high recommendation. If you haven't checked it out, go check it out. Blue Beetle number 7 especially. And if you want even more convincing about it, NerdInitiative.com has the interview we did with Josh Trujillo on YouTube form. We have it on the ODPH network. If you haven't checked that episode out yet, go get it. You can hear the passion coming out of Josh's voice as he's talking, and their creative team is like one of the best in comics, bar none. Oh, man. Like I could keep raving about that, but we have other books to talk about. One from Comixology Originals, She's Running on Fumes, Dennis Hopeless and Tyler Jenkins. This is one of the personal, like, a crazy stories, dramatic. It involves a little crime. It's there's a lot going on with this. And the story of Jeannie taking up her husband's business after he's in a car accident, mm-hmm. and where things go from here is absolutely wild. But it's a very emotional driven story.
Okay.
And it's very personal with Dinos Hopeless. Like I say, we talked about it on for issue number one. This is, like I say, it keeps up that vibe. It's not your average story. Definitely rides high on the emotional aspect of things. So this is one you want to go check out. Like I say, issue number one was very good. This is right up there with it too as well. Also, from our friends over at Mad Cave Studios, The Devil That Wears My Face, number 5. Pad will not read this. This is horror.
Fuck no.
Which we know. And like I say, he's not saying you don't read it. If you're into horror books, if you're into action, if you're into drama, if you are a fan of like the style of the movie Face Off with Nicolas Cage and John Travolta, imagine that, but involving a priest and a demon. This is what we have here. This whole the series has absolutely been kicking ass. If you haven't checked out, David Pepless, one of the best writers in comics, is really just unloading the arsenal here, doing some very cool things with this story. And this is the penultimate issue. And then I'm even scared to see where we're going for issue number 6. Like, this has just been all over the place, but in all the right reasons. So give that a very, very high recommendation. And then we go to IDW, which, Pad, they have a book out this week that has a ton, and I mean a ton, of buzz behind it.
All right.
It is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Last Ronin.
Oh, okay. I'm familiar with that title.
To Revolution. So this is now picking up from that legendary story.
Right. The one that they were either did or are going to turn into a video game.
Yes.
Okay.
So this is one you don't want to miss. And like I say, it's absolutely going to be one that like fans are going to be talking about. Like, everybody's had this one circled. If you know The Last Ronin, IDW has got you covered on this one. And like, let's just say you need to go check that out if you're into that whole storyline. Like, it's absolutely, like, I could sing the praises about it all day. Like, that's how much I dig it.
They're working on the video game. It's not out yet.
Yes, but like, okay. I say, this is The Last Ronin 2 Re-Evolution. Absolutely fantastic. Over at Marvel, there is a book out that fans will be talking about, and it's Ultimate X-Men number 1.
Oh, okay.
Peach Momoko. This is a very different X-Men story than you have ever read.
Okay.
It is one that's very dark. It goes into a couple different directions. I would say this, there is a lot of strong material involved with this.
Right.
Reader discretion, I think, is advised. Marvel does handle this very tastefully. I want to point that out first and foremost.
Sure.
But they deal with a lot of mature subjects in this. And they, like I say, it's handled very tastefully. It's going some places with the story. But Marvel does a great job about explaining that. So keep that in mind as you're reading this. This is a very different style of the X-Men than you've ever seen before. So I'd say definitely give it a read and let me know what you think about it on social media. Also coming out this week from our fine friends over at Image and Skybound Entertainment, Void Rivals number 7. So this has been the second arc is now kicking in place for the, I would say, when we talk about the Energon universe, everybody really focuses on G.I. Joe and Transformers.
Understandably so.
Yeah, this is the one that kicked it all off. This is a very cool sci-fi story, and it's going into their second arc, and it's going some places. A brand new character is introduced. It's one that we've heard about since New York Comic Con, and now I'm really interested to see where the story picks up. Man, there's so many good books out here, too. And before I go, like, I honestly feel I would do a disservice if I did not plug this book. And, Pad, I know you're going to look at me with a double take here.
Okay.
There is a series out by Marvel that's written by Jason Lowe and penciled by Luigi Zagaria.
Okay.
The Sentry.
He's getting a series?
They did a 4-issue limited series.
Okay.
And it has, and obviously, you can tell by the sound of my voice and Pad's voice.
It's not normal that he gets his own series.
Yes. And you know I am not a fan of the character.
Right.
This series has been excellent.
Ooh, okay.
This series has really taken, the story is, in kind of a nutshell, people wind up with his powers, mysteriously. And it goes from there. This is the culmination of what we've seen. And I'm showing Pad the cover right now. So there is a lot of moving parts involved with this.
There's a lot going on there.
There's a lot. But trust me when I say this. This is a great finale. I was very impressed with this entire series.
Okay.
And you know my disdain for the character.
It's up there with Ben Reilly for you.
It's in my trifecta with him and John Walker.
Right.
U.S. agent. I really dug this series.
Okay.
And I cannot wait to pick up the trade paperback. And if you follow Nerd Initiative on YouTube, you do know a little bit of a spoiler. We are going to be talking with Jason on Turn a Page in 2 weeks. And I'm going to be telling him. Like, he actually knows. I put it out in a tweet today about it. Like, I don't really like the Sentry, but I love the series. So we're going to be talking with him. More importantly, about the All-Nighter that just came out in Comixology Originals. We'll be going to print via Dark Horse Comics. We'll be diving into that, but I have a feeling the Sentry will pop into that conversation, though.
Probably.
Man, there is so much other good stories to pick up this week. Make sure you head over to nerdinitiative.com and check out what the Comics Bullpen has got lined up there. A lot of fantastic stories this week. And also ODPH Podcast, we got our reviews up there as well, too. And before we get out of here, obviously we got to say, when it's New Comic Book Day, make sure to go out and support your local comic shops wherever you're at, period. That's it for anything and everything that is the ODPH. You can find it at odphpodcast.com. That's it for this week for entertainment. So for the one and only Padawan J.
Thank you.
I'm your host, Ken M. Thank you, as always, for listening to the ODPH Podcast. We'll see you next time.